sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Tawn Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls and questions in just a moment. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Top of the hour feature here in the 9 o'clock hour is something that's on a lot of people's minds, weed control, pre-emergent, and really getting the season off to a good start.
We are. I had to turn on my mic.
It's so important.
It probably is.
Mm-hmm.
It at any rate.
I can't reach it, so you have to do that.
Yes. When pre-emergent time comes around, a lot of people start calling, actually in February, saying, can I just do this? And I would wait if you're trying to do it in February because it's just too cold and nothing's actively growing. The ground is too cold also. And so I got blindsided a little bit this year because the forsythia started blooming over a week ago where I live in Santa Quinn, and we are colder than most of the Wasatch Front. And so it's been blooming for at least a week to 10 days across the Wasatch Front. And that's one of the indicators that it is time to put the pre-emergent down.
You see those beautiful yellow flowers. It's time.
It is. The problem with the forsythia is it's still a bit early, but it's within the ballpark. And so we just tell people, because a lot of people are familiar with it, to just put it down when the forsythia is in bloom. But the actual best time to do it is when the forsythia is done blooming and lilacs are just forming flower buds. And so we're getting out in the, not the pun not intended, out in the weeds a little bit here with timing. And so what I like to do is just get a soil thermometer or a kitchen thermometer and stick it into the soil in a few places. When the soil temperature is around 47, 48 degrees, 50 degrees, that's a perfect time to put the pre-emergent down.
So why is that the perfect time?
Well, when the grass hits about 55 to 60 degrees, the crabgrass starts to germinate. And so it'll still be another 3 or 4 weeks. Looking historically over the last 4 or 5 years, March has actually been a little warmer sometimes than April. And we've been really stormy through April. And when the soil reaches about that 50 degree mark, it's going to be 55 degrees within a few weeks. And you need to get that pre-emergent down and have those granules break down in the product a little bit to be effective. And so that's getting down just in time so that you have the maximum effectiveness against crabgrass so that that product lasts the most time it can. So many of the pre-emergent products for crabgrass are going to be a 60-day product. And if you put that down in early March, late February, even though the temperatures are cooler, you've lost some of that time.
Mm.
And that's why we like to wait for some time when the forsythia blooms to about tax day in April 15th to put that pre-emergent on the lawn.
Is it something everyone should do?
No, it's not. If you have to use a pre-emergent, then you need to ask yourself, what's wrong with my lawn? Because a healthy lawn outcompetes most of these weeds. Now, every lawn's going to have a few, but a few weeds doesn't justify a pre-emergent. And so the other thing that they need to do some research on is, are the weeds in my lawn going to be controlled by a pre-emergent? Because if you have weedy grass right now in your lawn, it's not crabgrass. It's a fescue or a barnyard grass or something else, because crabgrass is annual and it grows during the hottest part of the summer. And that's why it doesn't start to germinate until soil temperatures are around 55 to 60 degrees. And it's at its worst through July and August. And so if you have weedy grasses right now, the pre-emergent's not going to help you. If you have field bindweed, a pre-emergent is not going to help you. And so you really need to know about what weed you're going after to really have something that's going to be effective. And so what I like to recommend people do is if they have crabgrass or foxtail or other weedy grass problems that are annual grasses, is go ahead and use pre-emergent, but figure out why the lawn is struggling and try to remedy those situations. You know, are you mowing higher? Do you need to fix your irrigation system so it waters more evenly? Do you need to aerate more often? So we need to start looking at why the lawn is unhealthy so that we don't have to use a pre-emergent.
So if they have some of these other problems, some other types of grasses not affected by the pre-emergent, is this the time still to be treating those with whatever they find that they need to be using?
It depends on what their particular problem is. You know, if it's field bindweed, you know, the morning glory, it is not blooming or germinating or coming, breaking dormancy right now. And so it will start to in mid to late April through May. And when those, stems are about 6 inches long, the actual best at treatment for them is a spray of something containing quinclorac, which would be like Image all-in-one lawn weed killer, or maybe there's a few others out there, Q4 Plus. And so you really need to know what weed you have to know what you need to apply to control them short term. But then what plan are we forming so that we don't have to keep reusing these every year?
Right. A healthy lawn will prevent a lot of weeds.
It will. And the other thing about pre-emergent is that if your lawn is in need of fixing or repair, pre-emergent is going to take you down one particular path. And what it will do is help prevent a lot of, you know, weeds that are germinating, but you cannot resod or reseed those areas for sometimes a calendar year, but you need to read the label on the product. And so if you're trying to repair the lawn, pre-emergent may not be your best option because it prevents everything from germinating, not just weeds. And then the other thing to consider is that, let's say you have a lot of spurge, and the most of the pre-emergent products that you're using are intended for crabgrass, and so you may need to switch up products if you have broadleafed weeds.
All right. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, and it gets a little confusing sometimes, but with some research and trying to figure out why you have the weeds, you can save yourself a lot of time and money.
Right, it's expensive.
Because right now at the farm store is a bag of pre-emergent mixed with fertilizer. The going rate's $50 to $60.
All right. And you've put up a really great article, or Michelle has put up a really great article on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page as well, talking about weed prevention that you can check out. We're going to come back with your calls and questions. Doug is up next, then Jared. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls and questions. Doug has been waiting very patiently on the line in South Weber. Good morning, Doug. What was your question this morning?
Good morning, Maria and Tom. I've just been hypnotized by the pennies from heaven dropping and wetting all the gardens and everything. It's a wonderful morning. So anyway, just a part of that segment with the pre-emergent, I do have a question on that in application timing. I've done pre-emergents before and stuff like that, and you know, the cost of it is pretty high, and so I've transitioned over to a professional agency that's doing it. But the question I have is, they also indicate that they can do aeration by way of chemical. Is there such a thing like that? Because they don't bring any machinery in.
It's just a surfactant, and it lasts. There may be ones that last longer. It's a surfactant that lasts for several weeks. and then you're back to square one. It doesn't actually do anything to improve the soil. It just uses something chemically similar to a dish soap that breaks up the surface tension and tension of water and helps it penetrate a little bit more deeply into the soil. And so it's a poor replacement for actual aeration, hollow core aeration.
Yeah, I got a Ryan core aerator, so I'll probably do that every other
year.
You
are so much farther ahead doing that than using a chemical aerator, which is really just a surfactant, every time, because you're actually pulling those cores out of the soil. And as those holes naturally fill back in, the soil loosens and it pulls thatch out that then breaks down and introduces soil particles into the thatch layer that also breaks it down more quickly. And these chemical aerators are just not going to do that.
Very good. Now what I really called you about, if you have time.
Yeah, really quick.
I do have 150-foot length back of my yard. I'm really looking to, because townhouses are projected to come in, looking at columnar spruce as kind of a block and then break patterns. I need about 20 feet. Is there anything else you can recommend?
Oh, there's all sorts of things. Any columnar evergreen that you plant, so juniper, spruce, pine, may need to be wrapped in the winter to keep them from splitting out. And the spruce are highly susceptible to that. The columnar ones, you know, they work well in Portland and Seattle because they get very little snow, but because of their branch angles, if you don't wrap them, they can split and it ruins the form, but they will work. Are you wanting a permanent one back there? A permanent screen?
Yes, because I just wanted to block the townhouses, but still, I want to see the mountains.
You could use Emerald Arborvita. Those will maybe need to be wrapped, but they're really common. They may be less expensive. There's a lot of them around. They do well here. There are some columnar junipers, several varieties, Skyrocket, Taylor, that will get anywhere from 3 to 6 or 7 feet wide, depending, and they would be water-wise. And some of the slightly wider junipers may not need to be wrapped if they were going to get 6 to 8 feet wide each. Columnar oaks would be a little more expensive, but they wouldn't be a total screen in the winter, but they would be pretty. There are several types of columnar conifer that you could use.
Very good. Is it time to plant Walla Walla onion sets?
Get them in as soon as you can. The reason the bulbs get so big is that they're very day length dependent, and because their day lengths are increasing, the plant grows its bulb big. So as soon as you can get them in, I would.
Thank you so much for your show. Wonderful.
Thanks, Doug, for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, they have a peach start, probably started from a pit that's growing kind of in a barbed wire fence, and they're wondering if they can actually transplant it.
Yeah, I would dig it. And if it's starting to dig it as quickly as they can, otherwise wait for fall. But the peaches will probably be really good, but they'll likely be clingstone.
Okay. Our next listener says they have a forsythia that's loaded with solid yellow blossoms. Another one 20 feet away. There's nothing. Help.
There's nothing you can do. Plants do this sometimes. It could be pruning. It could be. There's a lot of different reasons. And the only thing they can do is be patient and wait for next year.
Okay. Jared is on the line in Morgan. Good morning, Jared. What was your question?
Good morning. Yes. I have a question regarding some strawberries. So I have a small strawberry patch. Last year at this time, we still had probably 2 feet of snow over the top of them. And I went out last year and uncovered them, just dug the snow out from around them, and they were green. And they did really well all last year. And then in the fall, I was worried about another big snow year that we were potentially could have had. So I did a little bit of research on what to do to protect my strawberries through the winter. And from the University of Minnesota, I found that I ended up covering them with about 2 inches of hay or straw as an insulator. And now I don't know do I go out and uncover them now? I don't have any snow. All my snow is gone. And I've kind of looked up underneath the hay, and they are green. The strawberries are green, so I just don't know. Do I uncover them now? Or
you
do I wait?
Give it another week or two, just because Morgan's a couple of weeks behind the Wasatch Front.
Yeah,
and
I am going to probably get some snow again in April.
And it's not that the snow will hurt them. It's just the snow is a great cover and the straw is, because the strawberries are actually not that cold hardy. And if they get exposed to temperatures in the teens, that can kill the tops, and then it may kill the patch out. To get that straw off, you can carefully sift through it, but a leaf blower, if you had, not on the highest setting, but you may be able to get the straw free using a leaf blower too.
Okay. And then about thinning them, when should I thin them out?
When they're done producing fruit, take about a third of them out every year. Any plants that is 3 or 4 years old comes out.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Jared. Thanks for your call this morning. Mm-hmm. Connie would like to know. She said she had both goo on her low-growth sumac and shotgun fungus on her Quazon cherry last year. And she wants to know if she should treat one or both of these this year, and when and what, if so.
I don't know what the goo would be on the Grolo sumac. If it's on a branch, I would prune it out. But shot hole fungus is best treated right when the blossoms drop from the Quazon cherry. She can use a fungicide. But when the leaves are dropping in the fall, when about half of them are off the tree, you treat it with a fungicide then, too.
Next listener wants to know, when should they do a soil application of chelated iron for their raspberries?
Now.
When is the earliest that they can plant outside geraniums and petunias in the Utah Valley?
May.
You got to wait a little bit. Carol is on the line in Centerville. Good morning, Carol. What was your question this morning?
I've got this cherry tree that in this home that I just bought, and I was excited to have cherries, and they blossomed last year, and they turned into little green cherry about the size of a cherry pit, but they never got any bigger. And they had a tiny little red skin of fruit on them, but they just never turned into real cherries, and they're nasty too. Is this something that I can fix, or should I chop the cherry tree down?
We may need to hold you through. So I need to ask some questions. Okay. One, do you know that it is a fruiting cherry?
I don't. It's been speculated that this little housing development was raised on what used to be a cherry orchard, because tons of these people have cherry trees and nobody has anything else. And they're all right here when you bought the house. So I assumed that it was.
Because it could have grown up from rootstock, which would dictate that the fruit's not very good, or it could have been a seedling, and if it was a hybrid between different cherry species, that could also do it. And so how is it being irrigated?
Just with the sprinklers.
Okay. And does everybody else's cherries have good fruit on them?
Yeah.
So you probably either have a rootstock that came up or a seedling. And if it doesn't produce good cherries, I would consider cutting it down and just planting a new cherry tree.
Okay. It's a big tree. Does somebody need that cherry wood for something amazing?
Maybe. I mean, if the birds will pick the cherries off, I suppose, and if it's not producing usable cherries, if it's providing shade or something, but it's just one of those situations that is probably not going to produce good cherries. If this year, especially, I'd give it one more year. And then if it doesn't, then make your decisions.
All right, Carol, thanks for your call this morning. We're going to break. 801-575-8255, the number to call, or text 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with The Greenhouse Show. Maria Anton taking your questions. 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Next listener has a couple of questions, Ton. They say they had an arborist come and recommend a crooked tree, pruning for this crooked tree, and training a new leader, and they're wondering if that's going to work for a crooked tree.
Maybe. Without seeing the tree, I can't really say.
Kind of hard to tell them that.
I mean, you can train a new central leader up into a tree, but I just, without seeing the tree, it's really hard to
say.
Hard
to know. Okay, and then they're saying they're looking for an Oregon grape, but what they've found doesn't look like theirs, but they're wondering, they're saying theirs is over 50 years old, so it probably wouldn't look like theirs, right?
There may be some differences. There are three main Oregon grapes available. There's standard Oregon grape, which gets 8-9 feet tall. It's evergreen, and the leaves kind of turn a plum purple in the winter. Then there's dwarf Oregon grape that gets 5 or 6 feet. And then we have creeping Oregon grape that gets anywhere from 6 inches to 18 inches and forms a ground cover.
So they may be looking just a totally
different. Yes, and so there's three options generally. And then every once in a while, you'll run into Fremont Oregon grape, or Mahonia is another name for it, which looks like a holly. And then there's others even that you run into very sporadically, but the main three are creeping Oregon grape, dwarf Oregon grape, and standard Oregon grape.
Okay. Next listener wants to know, does a mulching mower and not catching the clippings, does that add to the thatch buildup?
It does not add to the thatch buildup because the grass blades are chopped so finely that they quickly break down. In fact, if you mulch your lawn clippings back in, you can skip one fertilization a year because it adds that much nitrogen back to your lawn. Now, if you're leaving a trail of grass clippings behind you, then it can add to the thatch layer, and you would want to bag the clippings for a couple of weeks in May until the lawn slows down a little bit. Mm-hmm. What I will do during that time of year is collect my clippings, but then they go into my garden to help conserve water and keep weeds down. And as soon as when I mow and I'm not putting a trail of grass behind me, I just mulch all the grass back onto my lawn.
And those clippings don't get grass seed in your garden?
No. Even if the grass starts to form seed, you mow it often enough that the seed doesn't mature.
Okay, just interested in that. Our next listener wants to know, how and when should they use Preen?
When they need it, and in the spring sometime.
It goes in the flower beds.
Yes, and I would read the labels because Preen's good for many weeds, not for others. One not labeled is spurge, and so they may need to use something different. But generally any time in the spring, but you want the beds to be finished, everything planted. If you're putting mulch down, get it down, and then the last thing you do is the pre-emergent, and it never goes under the mulch.
Okay, the next listener says they put down Preen 6 weeks ago. Will that help with weeds during the summer?
It depends on how long the Preen lasts, the soil type. You know, they may have put it down.
I'm sorry, I misread that. Oh. If they put Preen down again in 6 weeks, will it help with weeds during the summer?
Yes, it would, but they need to look at their label to figure out how often they need to put it down.
Okay. This next person wants to know, can they dethatch or aerate after they put down the pre-emergent?
No. It'll break the barrier the pre-emergent makes, and it'll become ineffective.
Okay. James is on the line in Bountiful. Good morning, James. What was your question this morning?
Yes, I had a question regarding what would make a good screen, kind of a privacy screen. I live off of Bountiful Boulevard, and it's probably around 5,500 feet. And it's kind of in a bit of a hollow. It's got, we have a lot of natural oak and maple trees. So there's a fair, you know, in the summertime, there's a fair amount of shade. And I'm just wondering if there's any kind of a good shrub or bush that would be, that would make a good screen in that type of environment.
Do you have deer in your yard?
Yes.
Many of the shrubs that you probably would want to plant that are broadleaf evergreen are going to be deer candy.
Oh, yeah.
You may
okay.
as well just put Snickers and Milky Way signs above
no.
the bushes.
Oh, no.
Because they'll just tear them up. And so privets maybe. There's a lot of different shrubs that deer feed on. And did you, with that shade component, that makes it a little bit challenging because if you can't keep the deer away, many of the deer tolerant or the deer, the shrubs that are shade tolerant are fed on by deer. Now there are yews, it's spelled Y-E-W, so something like maybe a Hicks yew or others that are a needled evergreen that are shade tolerant, but if the deer get really hungry, they will feed on it and it kills them, because a lot of our toxic plants have precursors to cyanide and they get in the digestive system and then are converted by the acids in their stomachs. And anyway, so that's a tough situation. How tall do you need the shrubs to get?
Oh, I was just looking at something that could maybe get up to maybe 4 to 6 feet. About okay. The only natural one that I see out there is some type of a holly shrub that kind of grows wild.
But, there's dwarf Oregon grape holly, which is more of a bush. It's very closely related to our native creeping Oregon grape. And so dwarf Oregon grape might actually be one you could use. It gets five mm-hmm. or 6 feet tall. It can be hedged a little bit. There's also, and they may not get quite that tall, but we have the coral berry, which is very shade tolerant and very beautiful too. It has a purple berry on it.
Coral berry.
Yeah.
Coral, you say that's a type of holly?
No, coral berry is not a type of holly. There's snowberry and coral berry, which are completely different shrubs, but they fit your size constraints. And then the Oregon grape holly, the one I would use is the shrub, but it's the dwarf Oregon grape holly.
The dwarf. Okay. Okay, super. Well, no, those are some great ideas. I'll check those out, and those could very well do the trick.
All right, James. Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they're getting ready to sod their backyard, and they've been told about a different kind called Desert Sage, sold by Chanshare. They say it uses 30% less water. Looks like it's supposed to look like bluegrass. Do you know anything about it?
Yeah, it probably will. It's just they're using Kentucky bluegrass varieties that are a little bit more drought hardy that may have some fescue in it.
Would you advise them getting?
I think
like
it would
that?
Be fine. It's going to be more expensive. They could call their local conservancy district and find out if they wanted to do it from seed. Then there are several companies marketing a water-wise turf mix that looks and acts like bluegrass, but that is also 30% more drought hardy than Kentucky bluegrass.
Okay. Next listener says they planted a wireless alcova last year that came tied to one stake. Should they take that out now?
I would.
Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Rod, you'll be up next. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. And you can also text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and questions. Next listener is in Clearfield, Ton, and they say they've had great success growing jalapenos and other hot peppers, but they've been having a hard time with the Carolina Reapers, and they're wanting to know if you have any tips for them.
If I would start them early under grow lights and get them going, a lot of these peppers, the habaneros, but these really hot hot peppers require probably 180 to 200 growing days. Mm-hmm. And so what I'll have people do is grow them in pots. And then if they haven't ripened yet, sometime in late September, bring them into a greenhouse or something similar and continue to grow them in the pots so that they ripen sometime in mid-October.
Next listener has purchased a couple of elevated cedar garden containers to grow their vegetables in. Is it safe to put linseed oil inside the bed to protect the wood? And if not, what would you recommend to protect
the wood? Linseed oil is fine.
Okay. Next listener is Rod in Salem. Good morning, Rod. What was your question this morning?
Good morning. We're still struggling with our burnt orange maple tree. It's 30 feet tall now, but the one just 50 feet from it is green and this one is yellow. We've tried we use Save-A-Tree and we'll treat next week with the chelated iron. But I remember last year you mentioned a few additional things. I can't remember what they were, so I thought I'd better call back.
Well, I would do a number of things because the maples can have nutrient deficiencies besides iron, including zinc, manganese, and magnesium. And so what I would do is make a brew with your chelated iron. And so you're going to get the chelated iron, and then you are going to get a liquid nitrogen fertilizer, some even like Miracle-Gro, and you're also wanting to going to get a liquid humate and then liquid micronutrients. And so you've got your iron, your humate, your liquid nitrogen and liquid micronutrients. And you're mixing this all together in 5 gallon buckets of water and then just drenching it under the tree into the soil.
That sounds good. Also, last year, for the first time, the poor thing, the covering over the trunk split. I've reattached it, but what does that indicate?
Sun damage, winter sun damage. If it's on the south or west side, those trunks need to be wrapped in the winter until they get the really deep, corky bark.
Yeah, it's 14 years old, so it's pretty, very good.
What maples do. It's unfortunately a lot of the maples that have orange or red fall color, whether it's Norwegian sunset, Pacific sunset, whatever, they have just really thin bark. And in our dry, arid climate in the winter with the intense sun, the bark splits unless you wrap them.
Rod, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener says that they had grasshoppers overtake their flower garden last year. They're wanting to know how you feel about EcoBrand. They tried a bunch of things and whether there's a more budget-friendly option.
Until you can get neighborhood-wide control, no matter what you do is going to be marginal. And so they can try it, but until they get the neighbors to do it, and if they're next to fallow fields or on the hillside and can get treatment in a broader area, anything they do is just going to be, you're always behind the eight ball with it. And so they could try the EcoBrand, and when the grasshoppers first start coming out in the fall, in the spring, and they're small, is to get that kind of stuff out. But if they know that the grasshoppers are attracted to certain plants, then those are the plants that they would maybe spray. You know, in a vegetable garden, it seems like they like the marigolds better than other plants, and so you might plant trap crops. But download USU's fact sheets on grasshoppers to get some suggestions. But on a single yard basis, it's just very, very difficult.
Okay, I'm going to try and squeeze Sage in here. Sage, good morning. What was your question?
Well, I dropped my son off at a basketball camp last year at BYU, and it had a tree or a hedge line of fragrant bushes. Do you know what those are?
I have no idea. When were they blooming?
It would have been like June, early June.
Early June.
But it wasn't necessarily a bloom. It was just the fragrance. Man, it was amazing.
You know, there are a bunch of linden trees that it could have been. The lindens have a nice fragrance because there's a ton of linden trees on BYU's campus. Early June is just a time, unless they had some lilacs in proximity, but that's too late for lilacs. It's too early for butterfly bush. It's too late for a lot of the viburnums. And so my best guess would have been maybe linden trees that were in proximity. Yeah, because if you didn't see any blossoms, it was likely linden.
Okay. And it's a tree, not a shrub.
It is. And so you can look those up because anything else, I mean, Canada Red chokecherry and spring snow crabapple, sometimes I have a nice fragrance, but those are more of a May bloomer.
Right.
Even April, so.
Perfect. Does chili pepper really get deer away from your tulips?
It can. You have to spray it after every rainstorm, but it definitely can. There's some homemade mixes you can look up online or just buy it commercially.
Okay, we have just a minute before the top of the hour news here, Ton. A couple of aeration questions. Best time to aerate and when and how often should they aerate?
Late April through mid-May. Usually once a year is fine. If it's a lot of lawn traffic on a clay soil, twice a year.
All right, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Number for you to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. When we come back, following the top of the hour news, our top of the hour feature in the 10 o'clock hour is pruning roses. A lot of people have been very excited to prune roses, so they're really getting into it. If you're just joining us, our plant of the week was the dwarf iris, and you can find out more about that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, as well as the top of the hour feature at 9, Controlling Weeds Using Lawn Pre-Emergent, a great fact sheet for you. And remember, you can always catch us in podcast form at kslpodcast.com.